Welcome to the Fix Podcast here on thesportsvirus.com featuring pitching mechanics expert Angel Borelli. I'm your host, Joe Castellano, also the host of the San Francisco Giants Inside China Basin Podcast and the San Francisco 49ers Extra Podcast. The Fix is your bi-weekly show focusing on pitching mechanics, injury prevention, and peak performance on the mound. Angel Borelli has a master's degree in sports science and has been a strength and conditioning coach for 35 years. For the past 20 years, she's worked specifically on investigating pitching deliveries. Pitchers from Little League on up to the big leagues seek out Angel for solutions that will help take them to the next level. She also works with pitchers who are recovering from injuries by giving them customized training programs that will get them back on the mound, and she finds and corrects the flaws that led to the injury in the first place. Education, solutions, and troubleshooting here on the Fix Podcast, also available on the iTunes podcast app. And since today's episode is starting right after the All-Star Game in Cincinnati, we will start, Angel, by talking about some of these pitchers in the All-Star Game and how amazing it is that other than the starting pitcher of the game itself, like a Zach Greinke, for instance, or Dallas Keuchel, the other guys who are coming out of the bullpen, a lot of those guys are starters, like Clayton Kershaw, who ended up taking the loss, or Madison Bumgarner of the San Francisco Giants. You have these guys who are just, they're used to being starting pitchers, then they're coming in relief, and we see this in the postseason, and I mentioned Bumgarner because he was successful in that role, but not everybody can do it. Tell us about how difficult that is to come in a relief situation, in a high-profile situation in the All-Star game when it's not something you normally do.
Well, you know, when we look at the difference in starters and closers, and the closers pretty much know their closers from a very early age because it's something they like to do, but also they know they're built for it, they're probably different physiologically. I don't know if anybody's ever done any research on this, but they're like an athlete that's somebody who does the 40 yards dash as opposed to running a long distance. So I think physiologically there's a difference, but you were talking about professional pitchers who this is what they do is for a living, and also you're talking about the best of the best that happen to be in this game. So these are guys who know how to pitch. And I think that because, I mean, I know it's a high-profile game, but I don't think it's high-profile to them in the way that we might think it is. I think to them it's, I mean, their job on their team is set. And I think if you took a starter and he walked into the field one day and you said, oh, you're coming out of the pen, and he had no forewarning, I think he'd have a harder time dealing with it in the normal situation. This is a game where they already know that this is what's going to happen. And my guess is that for some of them it's fun, because I think starters always are thinking of going the distance to seven innings. And I think that for starters that warm up properly, and my guess is that they did something different in their bullpen to make sure that they could bring it and bring it fast. And I think this is something that they probably don't do prior to a game. Now, starters know that if they have lousy first innings all the time, they didn't warm up properly in their bullpen. That's a very important point to always remember when you're a starter. If you have a historical bad first few innings, you better look at what you're doing in the bullpen. But these guys are professionals. They know how to do it. And they also know how not to get in trouble early. But I think that with this kind of a game, when they know they're going in for one inning, it could be freedom for them to where they get a chance to do what they need to do in the bullpen. My guess it was a little bit different. And then really, really bring it. As a regular concept in terms of are they different? Yes, they're different. Are they different mentally? Yes, they're different mentally. Every time I ask a guy, are you a starter or a closer? And sometimes they're being used in a role they don't like. They'll say to me, the closer who's being used as a closer will say, you know, I prefer being a starter because I like to have that control from the beginning of the game. And a closer that's being used as a starter will say, geez, you know, I just want to get in and get the job done, and I love coming in tense situations. So those are the two comments I hear consistently, and that's a psychological profile. And that's like the difference in somebody who wants to be a fireman and someone who wants to, be a plumber. You know, one guy likes risk, one guy doesn't. So there is a huge difference, but I think in this game, they have forewarning, and I think they use it as like, hey, this is a time to go full out right away, and then they go and get the job done. And I think that's why it works out for them. I don't think it would work as well if they had to do it, in a, you know, if they all of a sudden had to do it without any warning during their regular games.
Well, it does look like Jacob DeGrom of the Mets could be a great closer based on what he did in the All-Star game, striking out all three batters on 10 pitches, throwing 97 miles an hour. He was unbelievable. Of course, Madison Bumgarner has shown that he can be a really good relief pitcher in the World Series. And you had a chance to take a look at his mechanics. Let's listen into what you had to say on the Inside China Basin San Francisco Giants podcast here on thesportsvirus.com. Let's hear what you had to say today.
First, I want everyone to remember that when you ask me or you ask a sports scientist who does the kind of analysis that I do about something like this, it's sort of like if you have a house that withstood an earthquake and your house looks fine and it seems fine, but you're really worried that something happened to it that you can't see because it shook so bad during the earthquake. I'm the architectural engineer that you would bring in that would have to look at things that you couldn't see, even though the house looks great. So that's the perspective I'm coming from. So what I want to say about Madison is he's what I call sucker punch pitching, which is why when you hear the announcers talk about him, they keep using the word nasty. And he is nasty because he kind of, in a sense, if he were a fighter, you would say he fights dirty. So here's what he does. And this is an example of why we do not want little kids to go watch TV and then try to duplicate what they see by a pitcher that they might love. I am sure he is held in very high opinions from pitchers because pitching is deceiving the hitter, and it's what he does the best. And the reason why he does it the best is his arm leads the way, and before his body is even squared up, the ball is out of his hand. And intuitively, when we're standing facing a target, or let's say if two people are squaring off to have, you know, a little boxing match or whatever, intuitively your eye is looking at the whole architecture of the body. And basically people face their target before they're throwing or throwing a punch or doing whatever they're doing. He has a style that would be difficult to teach. We would hope no one would teach it. He does it well, but it is a style that you would never consider normal pitching motion. He steps because he comes out of the glove, and he's completely diagonal to the plate. And by the way, the hitter should be looking at his hand at that point because they certainly can't see it when he releases the ball. Right. But that's where he shows the ball. He comes out so diagonally, and then he steps so far to his left that when he goes to turn, he cannot, and he might do this on purpose, he cannot get his hips around, he cannot get his trunk around. So his arm is ahead of his body. That's number one. Number two, in a normal pitching motion, the hitter is completely squared up, and when he's squared up to the hitter, there is a point when you look at the pitcher, and we call it max external rotation, the arm is bent to 90 degrees, and then the elbow extends out to release the ball. Madison extends his elbow before he squares up. So as he's turning, his hand is flinging outward, and it's why he has a combination of a sidearm release and sort of an overarm pitching motion. He has characteristics of both, and it's why I would imagine that every hitter says something like, the ball comes out of nowhere, because the ball comes out of his hand sooner in his motion. The elbow is releasing sooner in the motion, and his hips aren't even around, and so he's all crossed up. Anybody who's got the game recorded, if you frame by frame it and you look at him from behind, from the outfield, you'll see his legs are so twisted up and so crossed up at the moment of ball release that you wonder how he even gets the job done. And it's why he doesn't get over his front leg. It's why he has a follow through that's more vertical. So he has a very unusual style. which is so not characteristic of overarm throwing in the sense of sequencing the rotation, but it makes him do what in the end we pitchers want to do, which is deceive the hitter and throw pitches that throw the hitter way off. And I'm assuming that is the kind of language the hitters would use to describe him. He is, however, not emulating a style that you would want anyone else to emulate, because teaching that kind of style would almost be impossible. You would injure someone probably before they learned it. So these guys are guys who somewhere in their motion when they were little, they did something and then they kept doing it. And when you keep repeating something, you can learn how to do it well. So he does what he does well. It would not be something you would teach. And in my job, it would be just like the architectural engineer coming to your house. I would say, be careful about an oblique injury, be careful about a back strain, and also he's running the risk of a possible shoulder injury because of the way he extends his arm with the arm being very long. And the other thing is he may be vulnerable to some ligament problems in his elbow only because his arm is not in a position where the ligaments are taut at the time when the forces are the greatest. So I would be always on top of him if I was his coach and always say to him, listen, if you get back soreness, rotation soreness, anything in the shoulder or elbow, you got to get on it the first minute you have any soreness. And that's the way he'll avoid an injury. I also think he'll have a ceiling to his velocity. I don't think that he's going to be like Chapman throwing 100 miles an hour. I think there's going to be a place where when he gets there, that's where he's going to have to stay because he is not using his rotation to create the velocity. He's actually using just his arm.
Is that why he seems to have an inconsistent landing with his right foot? And I noticed that with David Price as well, the Tigers left-hander. Sometimes they don't even really land their right foot. They're just kind of kicking it.
Well, did you see Madison last night? He actually skipped on his foot. He actually landed and then jumped up and skipped back down. It looked like I wrote down a skip. He looked like he hopped on his foot. It was very strange. Yes, because remember, if everyone looks at him from the outfield, when he's so diagonal that he is spinning. He spins, so he spins way away. We call it counter rotation, but he does this with his arms long. He doesn't counter rotate the way a lot of pitchers who have a direct stride do. His arms are way out wide. He rotates around and then he swings himself into his release point. It's why he doesn't lean. He doesn't lean away from his the ball like an overarm pitcher would do. He is actually more vertical or sometimes leaning into it like a sidearm. He has an interesting style. You couldn't say it's sidearm, and you couldn't say it's overarm. It's just a very strange combination. But he is not stable. You know, it's amazing that he gets the job done. It's not mechanics that, like I said, I would want anybody to try to. He's done a job of practicing it, and so he does it well. But it's not really the most efficient way to use the body. And he's actually twisting his body up pretty tremendously when he does it. But that is exactly why he lands that way, because he's spinning around and his foot has to catch him.
That was Angel on Inside China Basin talking about Madison Bumgarner. And certainly a lot of pitchers have unorthodox deliveries, Angel, but it's interesting because, you know, if you're having success with it, I guess, you know, you can't criticize it. You got to hope that the guy doesn't get hurt, right?
Exactly. I mean, you know, in my business, I see a lot of strange deliveries, but usually they're coming to me because their strange delivery is causing a problem. And if the delivery is that strange and they're having a problem when they're in high school, then they know it's just going to get worse. But it always is a moment when I have to say to them, are you willing to change some things because you're just going to continue to get injured? So Bumgarner's lucky because he hasn't had any injuries. And will he have some? As I said, you know, possibly. But it is. It's always rough when the reason why someone's having a problem has to do with the way they're doing what they do. And it requires not just the tiny adjustment, but a lot of major ones. And that's a decision every pitcher is confronted with if he's got pain.
Many of these pitchers who are all-stars, major league pitchers, when they were growing up playing baseball, they weren't just a pitcher. You know, they were in the outfield, or, you know, I would think most of the time they were the shortstop. They're the guy with the great arm. They're the best athlete on the team. So they're a shortstop and a pitcher. And that's not always the easiest position to be in for your arm, your long-term health as a pitcher, if you're thinking about trying to be a professional. Tell us a little bit about that question that comes up, I'm sure, for you a lot of times with parents looking at their son and how they're pitching and how they're doing at their other position and how many throws they're making. I mean, how does that affect the performance of a pitcher?
Well, I think this is a really, really important topic, and I think it's a serious one, too, especially if you have a youth pitcher or if you're a youth coach. Because on these teams, the best guy, the best arm might be the pitcher. So you want to use him as a catcher. You want to use him as a shortstop. You want to use him in the outfield. And when the kid's 10, 11, 12, you're not even thinking about the effect that it might have on the arm. So you're just on there as a coach saying, well, who can I use where? You're not really thinking about developing guys into certain positions. You know, everybody wants to win. And so you've got kids at an early age playing multiple positions, and all the parent is thinking about, or all the coach is thinking about, is probably a small picture. Like, well, he doesn't have to throw that many balls if he's in the outfield. I mean, how many balls are going to get hit to him, especially at a young age? But what people don't understand is that the minute you have a different position, you have to prepare for it. So the pitching motion requires recovery. It requires recovery of all the structures in the shoulder and the elbow, the wrist, the forearm, etc. When that arm is in recovery, if you take that same arm and you expose it to something that is intense, like, okay, you're a shortstop, so you're going to take 200 ground balls today, you know, and you're going to field them. Well, that arm isn't getting to rest. If you're an outfielder, okay, you're in recovery. Well, you're going to be in the outfield tonight. Number one, he's going to have to throw long toss that day because he's got to throw over 200 feet. So right. He's going to have to go beyond his normal throwing distance. And I want everyone to remember that 120 feet flat has the same forces as 60 feet downhill. So every number of feet you go out, you're increasing forces around the shoulder and elbow. Now, you know, I don't want to get into the argument if it's good or bad, but here's the way you want to look at it. Do you want a shoulder and elbow being exposed to increased forces on the day after when he just got done pitching? Now, if he didn't have to prepare for that position and he's going to stand there and maybe a ball is going to come to him, that would be different. But he's not going to roll the ball back. He's got to throw it back, and he's got to be warmed up to it. So now you've not just got what he's doing during the game. You've got before the game, he's got to go out 200-some feet, quadrupling the forces, and this is an arm that's supposed to be in recovery. So you're exposing the arm. So the place we don't want them is in the outfield because you can't get away from doing a preparation that actually has more forces. In my opinion, when someone throws long distance, they've got to recover from that because of the forces.
Right.
So that's one position we really don't want. So other positions create situations that are going to fatigue the arm. And whenever you have fatigue, you're going to have a decrease in velocity, or you're going to have an arm that's not as fresh. Does that make sense, Joe?
It does. What about if you are moving into the infield? Generally, you're going to have a different throwing motion. I mean, in the outfield, you have that long-armed throw. Most outfielders, not everybody, but in the infield, for the most part, you're going to have more of a short-armed throw. How does that affect you? Because, you know, as a pitcher, your motion is different.
Yes, well, that's a great question. So first of all, let's talk about being just an infielder. So I just worked with a great pitcher yesterday, and there's a certain issue we were working with. And I said, you were a shortstop, weren't you? He said, yes. Once you are a shortstop, there's a different way you do things because every position, when you're in the infield, it's about making a play, particularly for a shortstop. And so there is no style of throwing. You get to the ball. This is about footwork. You get to the ball as fast as you can. You get the ball off as fast as you can to whoever it is you're supposed to throw it to. There's no style to that pitching. You're working on quickness. You're working on your instinct, et cetera, et cetera. So they're throwing motions more out front. You don't take a windup and come behind you. So you're going to have a slightly, a totally different arm angle. Your glove arm's going to pull in completely differently. And this is one of the issues I have with my pitchers who are position players. So now you've got a skill that's built on speed. Once you've learned how to do something fast, it's really hard for the body to do something that's similar and then slow it down. Mm-hmm. So this is like one of the challenges. But remember now, you're using a different elbow and shoulder angle so that it can cause problems. In terms of a catcher, they're throwing so much. And they're throwing, so the volume is really dangerous if you're a pitcher as well. But the style that they throw is more like a quarterback. So their arm is out front in a way we don't want the arm out front as a pitcher. So now you've got a guy who's throwing 190 or 200 balls a day back to a pitcher in a different style, and then you put him on the mound. Not only do you have increased fatigue and increased volume of work, but usually your mechanics are not going to be sound unless you're really, really a great athlete that can say, okay, now I don't want to do that with my arm. I want to do something else. See, once you put a ball in your hand and you're a baseball player, you kind of do something that's instinctual for you. So if, you know, once you're doing something like being a position player or a catcher, it's probably that probably is going to seep into your pitching motion more than the pitching motion would seep into the other positions. So, yes. So when pitchers come to me, Joe, and they say, I want to throw harder, and I ask them what positions they play, and then I find out they're never resting, and then maybe they're in the outfield, and then they do this and they do that. Well, when is their arm going to be fresh? And the way I know this is true is I have pitchers who actually listen to me, and they stop being a catcher as well, or they stop doing being a shortstop.
Got to pick one or the other. Yeah, but Buster Posey used to do both, but he picked one, being a catcher.
Well, you can't believe what a pitcher, somebody who picks pitching, you can't believe what the pitchers say. They say, Angel, I didn't know it. My arm was never fresh when I was pitching. I can't believe what it feels like to throw a bullpen or to pitch in a game when I wasn't on the field the day before doing this, that, or the other. They are the ones that told me and confirmed for me that what science says is correct. And by the way, I don't know if you know this, but Dr. Andrews, when he came out last year with his list of rules, you know, this thing about youth pitchers and all the Tommy Johns, it's in the rules. Do not be a pitcher and a catcher. Of all the things we've talked about, that's the most serious.
Well, so what would be the least serious? Maybe first base?
First base. Well, this is where they put them, first base. And this is where pitchers go. And, you know, so if a position player has to throw across the field, he's going to have to throw 126 feet. You know, so, you know, any place on the infield, shortstop. But, you know, I know some people think, oh, shortstop's okay. But it's the practice to be a good shortstop.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a professional pitcher that said on television on one of the roundtables for MLB, I forget who it is, it's a retired pitcher. And when he said it, I cringed because I said, oh, no. And this is a guy who pitched in the 60s or something. And he said, I used to go out and be a short, pretend I was a shortstop in between my starts. And I don't know why these kids are having trouble these days. And I was thinking, well, maybe it has something to do with, didn't they also drink beer before they went out on the field? So, but no, you have to think about the preparation to be a good shortstop. You have to have a different type of training. So it all adds up. If you want to be great, you want all your ducks in a row. You don't have, you know, when an NFL football player, when a wide receiver goes to the combine and he's trying to get a scholarship or he's trying to get signed, I can tell you he wasn't climbing hills the day before. He was going to have to run a 40 because a 4.5 40 and a 4.4 40 are completely different in terms of whether you're going to get a job or not. So there isn't really any sport around where we allow you to fatigue yourself for something that you need to be really great at. Unfortunately, people, when they look at a baseball game, they think of guys standing around not doing much. But that's not the case. They have tons of practice to do. And so I think this is something that's overlooked, and I think coaches need to get on top of developing the players they need rather than just taking the one or two good ones and making them do everything.
If, let's say, a player is a third baseman, like I saw in the Division II baseball championship, they had a third baseman who was their closer, so he's not a starting pitcher. Is that maybe better? Maybe the effect on the velocity won't be as bad, or the fatigue, because he's not coming in to start a game. You know, a day later, he's basically going to be a relief pitcher whenever they need him to come out of the bullpen or come out of the third base position.
I think there's an effect. I think the only thing that you could say that would be positive is maybe this is a guy who's antsy sitting in the dugout. But guess what? If you're really a closer, you're not antsy sitting in the dugout. You might be antsy to get in the game as a closer, but you're not like, oh, I hate sitting waiting for to go in, so yeah, put me somewhere. You know, I still think it's an issue. And I think that If I were that coach, and it's a D2 university, and if they brought me in, I would experiment to find out if it had an effect. What I know to be true is the pitchers that have listened to this have changed their direction, became pitchers only, and reported to me that everything changed, recovery, velocity, everything. And, you know, that's where I get my information from. So I think it does have an effect, and even on a closer.
Here's what I want to know. How come pitchers can never throw to a base? They're the most accurate athletes on the field throwing towards home plate. They're throwing a strike, yet not all pitchers, but a lot of pitchers have trouble throwing to bases. They make errors, I guess different throw, right?
Well, yeah, because it's a completely different motion. If they're throwing to a base, they're in a hurry, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay, so it becomes a different skill. So remember this. So it becomes a different skill. They're getting the ball off the way a shortstop does, probably, right?
Right.
Or the way any position player does. Okay, so the arm action is not the same. So, see, this is the way you want to – this is the way a sports scientist thinks about things. You know, you're thinking baseball, and you're thinking, this guy can pitch. How come he can't hit,
right,
the glove on the third baseman? Well, it's a completely different skill.
Yes.
Completely different. And so he is – first of all, number one, as a pitcher, you're in control of the entire game. And there's nothing you're worrying about. You're in complete control. Unless someone's on base – it's what we call a skill that, you know, the environment's not changing. So he can take his time and just focus on what he has to do. When someone's on base or he's trying to do a pickoff move, he's got other things to deal with. And especially if he picks up the ball and has to throw it and he's off balance, he's not used to that either. It's why they do PFPs on the field. It's why they work with pitchers to do this. But it's not the same skill. They're not doing precision throwing at a target that is not moving. And that is what pitching is. The target's not moving. They know where they're putting it, and the arm comes behind and then goes forward. And when you're making a quick throw, you have no external rotation. You're just, it's like flinging the ball from out in front. It would be more like throwing a football. You know, something where the arm's out leading the way and there's no body to it. So I'm not surprised to hear that at all.
Now we get to have some fun because it's time to talk
velocity.
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 And look at that, triple digits, 101 on our gun.
And today's subject is somebody who, in the All-Star game on Tuesday, Angel, in Cincinnati, a Cincinnati Red really lit up the gun. And it's not unexpected because we always see it. Aroldis Chapman excited the crowd. And, you know, any of the casual viewers who normally don't see him were thinking, well, he must throw 100 miles an hour every once in a while. How about he threw almost every pitch over 100 miles an hour, all but one pitch over 100 miles an hour. I don't know how hitters even come close to touching that when he's throwing, 102, 103 at times. So how does Aroldis Chapman generate all of this velocity?
Well, you know, you don't hear me say this often, but I loved what I saw. And there was something that was said on the game that I want to remember to talk about so everyone can go back and look at it, because one of the announcers did say something that's incorrect. But let's talk about Chapman. Wow. Comparing him, for example, to Bumgarner, if everyone goes back and looks at both of them from behind when they're delivering the ball, you'll really see the differences that I talk about. But here's what Chapman does. He does it the way it's supposed to be done. When his foot lands, his arm is where it's supposed to be. It looks like it's a little cranked backwards, but he has it in the right angle. And he rotates to create his velocity. It's book textbook. He rotates with three segments of rotation. They're sequenced correctly. He brings his pelvis around, his trunk around, then his arm. He has tremendous separation between those three levels of rotation. His base is solid. When you look at him getting ready to, when he's square to the target, he looks exactly like he's supposed to look. And you can see both feet. He's stable between both legs, and he delivers the ball from his shoulder. And that shoulder acceleration is a product of how well he rotated in those three segments and how well he sequenced that. So he is textbook about how well a pitcher can do when he uses his body to rotate to create the acceleration. So then the shoulder eventually has, and then he has tremendous shoulder and elbow velocity, which you can see obviously, but also the way he simultaneously works both of those joints is perfect. Now, here's what he doesn't do, but I think I know why he doesn't do it. And I want to talk about this because they took the time to draw a line, and then the announcer said something really incorrect. And if people have been listening to this show, and when we talked about stride and how long the stride should be, so I want to clear this up. So in the game, and Joe, tell me, do you remember when they
it was Harold Reynolds, and he showed the stride, and he said something about releasing the ball at 58 feet.
This is what he said, and this is what everyone thinks, and this is what I teach, and I want everyone to understand that I'm not saying his stride should be different, but here's what I want you to understand. First of all, here's what Harold was saying, and this is what we know is true. This is physics. If you release the ball closer to the plate, the ball, you shorten the distance to the plate.
Right.
The ball is traveling faster to the hitter. He can't even see the ball coming. So we want to release closer to the plate. If your stride is longer, too long for you to get over your front leg to get your hand close to the plate, only your foot gets closer to the plate. So measuring his stride and saying that his foot is this far down the hill says nothing about how close the hand is. For example, Chapman delivers the ball in a whole different way through the stride than someone who gets over the front leg. And his shoulder was actually behind his front knee. So if everyone would look, and if they, I of course, frame by framed it in my software, his hand is not closer to the plate. It's not as close to the plate as it could be. His stride is so long that when he reaches out with his foot, his knee is so far behind his foot that he cannot bend the knee and create the kind of thigh position that's required to get out in front of the foot and to get out in front of the leg. Mm-hmm. He pulls the knee backwards. When the knee pulls back, the center of mass, your whole body has to stay where it's at. So he reaches out, and then he delivers the ball. If his stride were shorter and he were over the front leg, he'd be releasing closer to the plate. Now, we, on a normal pitcher who comes to me, and let's say he's in his thrown in the 80s, the mid-80s, and he says, I need to, you know, more velocity. Why don't I have it? When we change the stride so he can release closer to the plate, and, of course, I'm showing this on film, he's throwing his way, and then he's throwing with the correct front leg that allows him to get over his front leg. his release point will be different, sometimes by 12 inches.
Wow.
And he's stoked, trust me. Now, the question is, could Chapman throw harder if his hands were close to the plate? I don't care how close your foot is to the plate. Your hand has to release closer to the plate.
Right.
Okay. Could he throw harder? Well, here's the deal. He is getting a tremendous stability. It's a strange stability, but it's a stability that he feels in through his front leg by having that knee be extended. Well, he actually has no choice because he reaches out so far. The way he's taught himself to pitch is to bring that knee back and then to have this stable knee because his leg is in extension. If you're over the front leg, your hamstring behind the knee is what's keeping you stable. Some guys are dominant in one way or another, so he's designed this stride to make him feel stable so he can throw as hard as he throws from the shoulder joint. If let's say he said, I think I can throw 103 all the time, what would be the way to do it? Well, we would say, hey, well, you know what, if you get over your front leg, but he may not have the stability that allows him to feel like he can rotate the way he does and separate the way he does. There's something he's getting from this that's making it feel okay to him. It's not what we teach. It's not correct alignment. It's not correct health for the knee. And his hand is not as close to the plate as it could be. And this could be demonstrated to him without him even having to throw a ball. But would it work for him throwing as hard as he does? I don't know. And this is one of those situations where he's doing everything else right. And unless he started having knee problems or the kind of issues that would come up from this, which would be groin or knee, then it may not be something he'd want to deal with. But what the announcer said is incorrect. His foot was closer to the plate, not his release point. The reaching out with your foot does not make your release point closer to the plate. He gets that ball to the plate at 100 miles an hour at a disadvantage because of his stride.
Wow. That means that he's even more impressive. His arm and the rest of his mechanics are more impressive.
I'm more impressed with him. And here's the deal. When you rotate the way he does and separate the way he does, and then has the arm position, other than that stride, and they haven't done enough research on this stride issue, and in fact, it's something I brought up to ASMI. You know, we need to look at this. But the deal is that everything else is so picture perfect, and you can't not ignore that if you want to throw hard, you must use your trunk, you must rotate from the hips first, you must get the body around before the arm. That's why he, compared to Bumgarner, never even a comparison, because Bumgarner does not do that rotation. He does not separate like that. He doesn't even have a stable base. So they would never be in a competition for velocity. What I love about Chapman is it's what science says, and science is always right. This is the way you develop velocity, the segments, the sequencing, and he does it. And it was beautiful to watch. And that he can do it consistently is because he's doing it right. If you do something the right way, you can repeat it. If you do something and you have an exotic way you do it, or a weird way you do it, or a fly-by-night way that you do it, you probably won't be able to repeat it all the time. There'll be too much wobble.
And it's something that we're seeing that is very exciting, and he might get traded here before the trade deadline, so he might be doing it in another city. Well, great information today, Angel. Look forward to talking to you again in a couple of weeks.
Okay, great, Joe. Thank you.
That's pitching mechanics expert Angel Borelli. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. If you have any questions or comments, send an email to angel@jimscience.com. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to the Fix Podcast on thesportsvirus.com.